So we're in Sefer Ha'Arishur, and we are in the introduction to the third section about inner knowledge. And he quotes the Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, which is also coming up in the next couple of weeks. Lama nismecha parashat meraglim leparashat Miriam. Lefi shelakta al iskei diba shedibra ba'achia urushaim halalu ra'u velo lakhu musa. So in the Torah, it puts the Meraglim next to the story of Miriam. Why are they placed together? Because Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about her brother. And they heard that and they saw that. And they should have taken the message. But they didn't take the message. They didn't learn the lesson. And they went and spoke Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. Ra'u va'alehem lo nagam me'ora klal. El toch olamam ha'pinimi lo chadru ha'devarim. When you see something, it's expected that you'll say, that happened outside of me, but what's the message for me? That's expected. It's expected that any incident that you ever see outside of yourself, you'll pause and you'll say, what can I learn from that? How can I grow from that? What in my inner world can be fixed, should be improved, should be guarded as a result of having had that experience? El toch olamam epinimi lo chadru adavrim. The message didn't go into the inner world. V'yesh li shtomem sheba'ad ze kinu chazal rishayim. And just for that, Chazal called them Rishayim. Why were the Meraglim called wicked in this line of Chazal? Because there was a message they should have taken and they should have absorbed and they should have learned for themselves. They didn't take that message. Halot tzadikim ayu ba'oto sha'ah. At that time, they were still considered tzadikim. They hadn't done anything wrong yet. U'manhigei ha'am, they were the leaders of their generations. Rak lefi rom dargat dor ha'midbar haya lehem listakel al ma'aseh Miriam bekivun al atzma. Because of their great level, it was expected, and this is expected from all of us as well, that whenever you see any incident and there's a message to take from it, you pause and say, what does that mean to me? Lachdir zihirut b'dibur al omek nafsham, v'lo lakhu musa. They're supposed to take the message, they didn't take it home. I don't know if you had this experience, but Ellie, can I do an experiment with you a second? Just reply to me whatever comes naturally to you, okay? Okay? I like tomatoes. Which means?
What you said, and I also like tomatoes.
So that's the natural response, that a person, when you say something, they'll take the same topic and talk about it in respect to themselves. Right, now, you could have answered me and you'd say, I'm so happy for you. Come by, I'll give you tomatoes, right? You could have answered me in respect to what I was saying. I was telling you that I was liking tomatoes. You didn't relate to that. But don't do that with your wife. If your wife comes and shares with you her emotions, right? I'm upset about this. Well, I'm upset about something else that you did. Don't take the topic that she's talking about and then just bring it home and start talking in your own words about what you're interested in. But that's natural. The natural thing that people do is that when you hear someone else talk about a topic, instead of relating to what they're talking about the topic, you just take that topic and you say, now what do I think about that? And then you just go on and talk about your own interest in that. And old people especially like do this about sicknesses. The elderly, they love it. I have this hernia. Oh, well, I have three double hernias. Okay. Now, they love like taking the topic that's being spoken about and then taking it in their own respect. Or army people like doing it about their wounds or which battles they were in. I was in this battle. I was in that other battle. And that's natural that people do that. And it's a healthy thing in this, meaning not in that respect. In the respect that we just did it when it's not so healthy. Because then, instead of like hearing the person, giving them empathy and being with them in what they're saying, so that's unhealthy in that scenario, right? It's much, much better if someone shares with you something from their inner world and they're talking to you, then you should relate to them about what they're talking about. In order to understand them, give them feedback on their world. Don't just tell them about what you think about it. Like imagine in a shiva house, where someone in a shiva house opens up and says what's hard for them, and the other person says, yeah, I remember when my grandfather died, and starts talking about that. I don't want to hear about your grandfather. Right? Someone right now is going through pain. They want to express their pain. And someone else who comes and then takes the topic of mourning or pain, and they say, yeah, well, this is an opportunity for me to talk about my pain. That's not appropriate. So in respect, when someone says to you what they're feeling, you should just be with them. Okay. But nevertheless, you see that it's natural that we take the topic and we reflect it back to ourselves. I said, I like tomatoes. Eddie Nadras says, I also like tomatoes. That's the natural thing that we do. Now, in Avodas Hashem, that's hugely important that we do the same thing on Midas. That when you see someone else speaking Lashon Hara, and you see them being punished for it, you should reflect back and you say, well, it's inappropriate to speak Lashon Hara, I'm not going to do that. If you see someone insult someone else, your natural response should be, I didn't like that. I'm going to be careful not to insult my family. That should be the natural response. In the same way as naturally we take the topic and we reflect it back to ourselves, it's expected to the harsh degree that Chazal even called them Roshayim for not doing that. The Meraglim saw Miriam speaking Lashon Hara and was punished. It was a given that they were supposed to pause and say, okay, same topic, Lashon Hara is bad, apply to myself. It's bad to speak Lashon Hara, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. That's what the default should have been. Just like we do that naturally, where we relate everything back to ourselves, we should relate behavior back to ourselves and midas back to ourselves. And say in the same way, I didn't like what I just saw, I'm not going to do that too. And we've mentioned this once before, but it's important to reemphasize that in life, everything that you see was sent to you by Hashem for you to learn from. And if you have an unfortunate experience of seeing someone harming someone else, or let's say even make it more severe, let's say you have the very, very unfortunate experience of being either verbally or even physically abused by a parent, so the next generation, you're going to have to respond in some way. And it's going to go one of two ways. Either it's going to go in the way of, I was harmed, so I will go on to harm as well, which is, really is not being big enough to outgrow and mature from that unhealthy learned lesson. I don't know any other way of doing it. In my family, someone was naughty, they were hit. So now, when I see my children being naughty, I'm going to hit them too. That's what I know, because that's what I've seen. So I've known my family. That's not thinking. And when if you ask the person, well, did you like being hit? And they say, no. So I say, so why are you hitting your children? Because they just say, I don't know, what else should I do? So I know. That's being small-minded. It's just taking what happened to me and passing it on. Someone who's big-minded will say, well, I didn't like it when I was hit as a child. So let me take that lesson and carry that on and say, well, I'm not going to hit my child now because I saw what it is. Take the lesson, reflect back on it, and learn from it. Everything you ever experience in your life is supposed to be for you to process, to contemplate, and then to respond back in a healthy way. If you saw Lashon Hara and you saw that it made someone else embarrassed, then you say, wow, that's an unhealthy thing to do. I'm going to take that message and I'm going to be careful not to embarrass someone else. And if you see someone empowering another person, and you see the smile on their face lighting up after an empowering word was said, you say, wow, that's a good thing to do. I'm going to learn that lesson. I'm going to do that. Everything in your life you ever see is sent to you by Hashem for you to learn either what to be like or what not to be like, but it's a lesson. And you're held accountable. The Rambam says in the beginning of Hilchas Tanis that if you see something which is bad and you don't take the lesson from it, you're held accountable. He says it's ma'aseh achzari. It's considered cruel that you saw something bad that happened and didn't take a lesson from it and you allowed the cruelness to continue in the world. You have the obligation from saying, well, I don't want that to continue. I'm going to fix that. You have that obligation. So Hashem designed us in such a way that we have a screen in front of us which is constantly teaching us lessons. And then usually, quite soon after we learn that lesson, we'll be given a test. If you pay attention to it, it's quite ironic. It's quite ironic. Usually after you've learned a particular lesson, you'll be placed in that same test where someone else will come to you and you'll have to act upon them or relate to them in a way that you just recently learned a lesson in that same way. And you have to be careful about this because it's almost like a novel that you're reading where, you know, if you're reading the novel from the outside and you're looking for the theme, then you see it, you notice it. Oh yeah, look, I know what's going to happen now. If that happened, this is what it's going to be next. But we're often so blind to our own worlds that we don't even see the obvious. Like, they just did that to you, and you were all upset about it, and I'm angry and making a big fuss. And then you had an opportunity to fix it with respect to someone else, but you did the same thing. And you didn't take that message. Hashem says to you, okay, if you're upset about it, let's see what you would do in that same situation. And he gives the opportunity to grow out, to learn the lesson, to grow. And if you're aware of this, you're paying attention, you'll notice it and you'll say, oh, I catch myself. I caught myself in time and I see I'm not going to make that same mistake as what I was upset about with someone else and I'm going to fix the next generation. And that's throughout our lives we have that opportunity. It's easier looking from the outside, but our goal is to look from the inside and notice it. Hamitrachesh misaviv lo bilvad shehu mareh la'adam nigei atzmo, elo hu ma'orer bo kisufei aliyah. That which we are shown outside of ourselves, right, what we're trying to build, what Alisha is trying to build here, is to, instead of viewing the world as random and things that happen just happen around you, but rather we're seeing the world as a laboratory for learning how to be close to Hashem. And everything that happens was specifically designed. Now don't ask me how Hashem arranged it, that everything that happens to everyone is designed for everyone to learn a lesson. Because that, you know, if it would be one person, it wouldn't be so hot. Let's say, for example, Akiva. Let's say Akiva is the only real person in this room and everyone else is actors. It could be. Right? And everyone in Kerem Yavin actually, or everyone you've ever met, ever, doesn't really exist. They're all just acting and pretending all around you just so that you are supposed to learn and pick up messages. Right now, no one thinks in that way, really, because everyone knows that they're also the center of the world. And you're also the center of the world. And you're also the center of the world. And everyone's the center of the world. But Hashem designs it in such a fantastic way that everyone who you'll ever meet is really there only for you to learn the message from. And in some ironic way, you're also only there for them to learn some message from. Now, you don't know that, and they don't know that. That Hashem designs that you'll always meet exactly those people to fix what you need to fix, to teach you the lessons you need to learn. Now, obviously, many, many of our day-to-day interactions don't have much to learn from, right? You just kind of pass someone, you say hello. But if you're sensitive, and if you're aware of subtleties, there are things to learn even in the most refined things. Even in the most refined, I'll tell you an amazing story. There was a man, not Jewish, lived in America. He had polio as a child. I'm talking about 100 years ago. He had polio as a child, and he was paralyzed. His whole body was paralyzed. Just his face was able to move, but he couldn't speak either. Because over here was paralyzed as well, and he was propped up in a chair, and his whole, he lived like in the out of town somewhere, and like not the five town, like out of town. and somewhere out of town, like somewhere like far out, he lived on a farm, and they had their own like kind of chickens and sheep and everything, and he had sisters, and he would just sit there propped up, and he had nothing to do, because he was paralyzed, fully paralyzed. All he could do was watch. And I was reading his autobiography, and he writes that he said that he learned that there are many levels of people, and what they say is not always what they feel, and what they feel is not always what they say. And he learned when a yes means a yes, and when a yes means a no, and when a no means a yes, and when a no means a no. And just by what, because he had nothing else to do, he was just watching his family interacting. And he started noticing body language, and how the body language expresses what they really mean. And he went on to be a psychotherapist. And not only a regular psychotherapist, but he went on to be someone who created an entire new field of psychotherapy to do with the area of hypnotherapy. And generations learned after him in order to see. His name was Milton Erickson. And it was a phenomenal breakthrough in what he was able to create. And basically the way he did it was, he was noticing subtleties that other people never noticed. Because other people just relate to what you say, and maybe very broadly to your body language in a very, very general way. But because he was just stuck for so many years, he was able to notice levels upon levels of subtleties within people. So what I'm saying is that even though it's true that there are big incidences, which is the lesson's obvious, like Miriam spoke Lashon Hara and she was punished, big incident, big message there. But if the more sensitive you become to other people and the interactions you have with them, you can pick up great, great things. Great thing. Actually, recently, something I happened recently. There's one rabbi who I very, very enjoy learning from. And he does something which makes some people feel very awkward, but I enjoy very, very much. Is that he, when you talk to him, it's very funny. You have to be very comfortable with yourself to be in his shir. But when you talk to him, then he doesn't just answer you back what you're asking. He answers you back why you asked that as well. Where it came from within you. Like, it's very awkward sometimes. So he's very, very, very insightful. So in the shir, someone put up their hand to ask a question. And the way they put up their hand to ask a question was like this. Okay. So he said, "You want to ask, but you're not sure you want to ask." And they said, "Yes." And they go, "What's making you hesitate?" Before he even took what the question was, he says, "What's making you hesitate?" So the person, and you have to be very aware of yourself in this rabbi's shir. So this person is thinking, he said, "I'm a little nervous what people will think about me." So, okay, now you can ask. Like, now that you're aware of where it's coming from. It was phenomenal. I love being in a shir. Even when he picks on me, I like it. And he picks on me as well, because then you learn so much about yourself just from being in the shir. Some people find it awkward. They don't come. People who are very self-aware and want to grow, then it's very, very interesting. Very interesting. Like he goes right into you, right into you. Even not just things that he notices, but he makes you know this as well, and everyone else in the shul also, and they know this too. But there's levels of subtleties. So everything that's happening all around us all the time are a lesson for us to learn about ourselves. But as well as that, now adding something new, they also awaken within us things that we don't have yet, but are worthy of having. Meaning, point number one is it makes you aware of what you're holding now. But point number two is, let's say you see something by someone else that you think is valuable. It's not something which you have now, but it awakens within you, wow, I want to be like that. That's something valuable. You notice something good. Like an example I just gave over here, where you see someone say a statement to someone else that empowers them. Someone was feeling low about themselves, and someone else comes along and says to them a word which gives them such chizuk. It's an authentic word. They notice something good that they do, and they pointed it out, and they label it. And I was like, wow, now that wasn't something within me until now. But I see that rabbi doing that to that person. I said, like, wow, I want to be like that. Like, that's amazing. So that's the second thing, that deeply noticing what's going on around you will build it in you. So point number one, if you deeply notice what's going on around you, you'll notice yourself. What did I notice? Why did I notice that? Why did that trigger something by me? You notice yourself. You get to learn yourself. But also you get to develop healthy habits and healthy inner world desires that you can now develop yourself in a much deeper way. And we learn this there from the Sifri. The Sifri writes, in the end of Parshas Re'eh, Ki am kadosh ata la'ashem elokecha. Kadesh atzmacha b'mutar lach. דברים המותרים ואחרים נוהגים בהם איסור, אל תצירם בפניהם. לכאורה היינו מבינים כי לפנינו גדר של זהירות ברגשות המחמירים, שאם ינהיגו היתר בפניהם, עלולים גם הם להורות היתר לעצמם ולנפור במדרגותיהם. They should say what we said so far. You eat חלב עקום. But there's someone else who is a good friend of yours who doesn't eat חלב עקום. So you bought your chocolate, which is your Chalav Akum chocolate, right? And you know that he's careful about this matter. So here the Sifri is saying, don't eat it around him. It's not fair, it's not nice. Don't eat it around him because it's going to make him feel like, oh, I did a bad thing that I took on this practice of not eating Chalav Akum, and now my friend's eating it and it's tempting to me. That's a simple reading, right? Let's just read it again. Ki am kadosh ta'al Hashem lokecha. You should be guard yourself in areas that are allowed to you. If someone else took on a Chumrah, and you're not machmir on that area, don't do it in front of them. So on a simple read, it's just that you're going to, you know, tempt them and it's unfair. Ulam, lefi zeh, bilti muvan, shasifri kore leze kadesh atzmacha. Then why is it saying make yourself holy? Shere ein kan din ben noheg heter. If it's something which is permitted, you're not making yourself holy, but it's something which is allowed. Elehu din ba machmir lebal yuzak. All you're doing is just being careful that he won't be damaged, but you're not being holy. You're not doing something holy by not eating in front of him. You're just doing a normal thing. You're not machmir, but you're just doing a normal thing. Just you're being careful not to harm your friend. Why is it called making yourself holy? I would say it's making yourself sensitive to another person, maybe. Right? To hit the other person. Why is it called making yourself holy? In fact, I would say the other person's being holy. He's separating himself from something which is... Why is it called you're making yourself holy from not doing it? Because... Uvechreach shasifri megale b'zeh geder nifla b'kedusha. So rather, the Alei Shor's insights, you know, when you start having insights into yourself, you also start having insights into the words of Chazal, also much deeper than the surface level. So rather, there's a new understanding of what Kedusha is. Behimtza'i bein zihirim, yoter mimeni, alai le'orer ritzoni liyot kamotam. V'lechol hafachot, bezman heyoti b'mechitatam, leitnahei kefi minagam. Kemo haro'e sota, chayav ligdor atzmo m'msibat k'lkulata. כך הורה הרואה נזהרים חייב לעורר עצמו לזהירות, וזה גדר של קדושה. It's a totally different read to what we thought initially. We thought initially it was saying that when you're around someone who doesn't eat Chalav Akum, you shouldn't eat Chalav Akum. We thought it was saying, you could eat it in theory, just it's not nice to them. That's what we thought it meant initially. But then why is that called that you're being holy? So rather what he's saying is, that when you're around people who take on something which is higher than what you are, that's an opportunity for you to learn from them. It's an opportunity for you to build something within yourself. At least for the moments you're with them. Maybe you won't keep it long term. But at least the moment that you're with that person, you can open yourself up to take on some sensitivity that they have whilst you're around them. And appreciate that. I'll tell you a story. I was in Karen Biavne. I was in Shalan Gimel. And And I walked into a room. There's two stories exactly the same. I walked into a room and everyone went quiet. And I said, what's going on? Why did they were talking before I walked in. I heard them talking. As I walked in, everyone goes quiet. So they said, nah, that doesn't matter. I said, no, what's the hook? Like, what's everyone talking about? They go, no, you can't say it now. I said, why? It's my birthday. You're preparing me a surprise birthday. No. It's just like, these are the kind of things that you probably wouldn't want to hear. And leave it there. So I realized they had been speaking Lashon Hara. And they knew I was very sensitive to Lashon Hara. So they didn't want to speak Lashon Hara. Now that's a beautiful thing, Baruch Hashem. I mean, someone comes into the room who's careful about Lashon Hara. And you're careful. Now, why were they careful? There's two reasons why they were careful. Either they're careful because they didn't want to upset me. There's the Lashon Hara sensitive individual, be careful. Wait till he leaves. Tzvi, I think your Chavrus is waiting for you in the Beis Medrash. You can go back now. We can carry on a conversation. That's one option. Or it could be that they also don't want to speak Lashon Hara. But there's temptation. I mean, you're with a group of friends and everyone's talking. You kind of get carried away and swept away. But then someone comes in who like, no, we're not going to speak Lashon Hara about him. So then what happens? The healthy sensitivity that everyone has there, not to speak Lashon Hara, is awakened. And they tune into it. And they say, oh, it's not appropriate. What's the nafka minna? When that person leaves the room, what happens next? If they really wanted to speak Lashon Hara and they didn't care, then they would go back to speaking it. But if really they're sensitive, they don't want to speak Lashon Hara, then they'll say, you know what, it's good that person came in. Let's go, let's change topic. And they'll have that sensitivity to be able to get out of the negativity they were in and be able to change topic. So you will always be around people on some level, on some middah, who are better than you in some area. Always. Even if you're the best in one area, there's always going to be someone who's better than you in some other area. And it's important to always attach yourself to people who you see as greater than you. And at least when you're with them, maybe it will last even longer, even after you're not with them anymore. But at least when you're with them, then you can say, well, I like being with this person because I find myself being more, thinking more holy thoughts, being more chesed orientated, whatever it is, whichever positive midah it is. But I find myself being a better person when I'm around them. Because when I'm around them, then what they have is awakened within me. I have it too. Because usually by me, it's quieter. It's not dominant. It's recessive. But when I'm with that person, suddenly it's awakened. Suddenly this good trait that I have within me all the time, but I don't usually activate, is suddenly activated. So therefore it's healthy to meet other people who are better than you in certain areas, that you look up to in certain areas, not just because it awakens what you already have within you, to be aware of it, but because it activates within you, which is positive. And you become a better person, at least when you're with them. And if you do it enough, then even when you're not with them, hopefully you can retain it. You can say, you know, I really liked the way I spoke when I was around that individual. I'm going to try and keep up that type of a speech, even when I'm not there anymore. And that would be a great mila that you had. Some people have it when they go, let's say, to Morasha Kolo or to NTSY Kolo, places like that, where throughout the year, or Ezra Camp, all right, throughout the year, where they don't act exactly like in a, let's say, a yeshiva-orientated way, right? And then they have an experience where they find themselves able to learn a full Seder and to be around great Rabbonim and to like speak in learning and to take on certain practices. And even though it's kind of a bubble, right? It's like exists separately to your real life. And then you have to go back to your real life. But you say, but you know what? There were certain practices I did there. I could bring those into my real life. I could do this as well. You get like a moment where you get to experience yourself on a different level. It awakens within you things that you don't normally experience. And then now you've experienced them, you say, okay, well, let's see what of that I can keep going. So that's another self-awareness. Where you're with someone else and you see that I'm acting differently around this person now. What is it? And then you become sensitive. Oh, he's good at this area. And when I'm with him, it awakens that within me and you become aware of that. You have to notice it. And as you notice it, you're able to say, I want to keep that going. And you carry that flame even when you're not with that person anymore. That's another value that you can have of being aware of yourself. Hamikiret makomo. In Pirkei Avos, it says there are 48 ways to acquire Torah. And one of them is someone who knows his place. In Parshas Yitro, it says, Gama kohanim hanigashim el Hashem yikdishu. And Rashi explains, Hanigashim el Hashem lakriv korbanot, al yismuchu al chashivotam lalot, yitkadshu yu mukhanim liityatsev al emdam. Kohanim, who are coming to worship in the Beit HaMikdash, they shouldn't say, it's my birthright. It's my birthright. I'm a Kohen. I deserve to be here. Do you know who my great-great-great-grandfather was? Aaron HaKohen. I told you this joke, no? Rav Silver. I love Rav Silver's joke. Someone said, you know why I do this? Because my father did this. And you know why he did it? Because his father did that. And Rav Silver goes on, and he went all the way back until he reached Terach. Avraham and Terach. The Mesorah goes all the way back. So a person, even he's a Kohen, is coming to the Avodah in the Beit HaMikdash. He can't say, oh, you know, I'm so chashuv, I'm come from Aaron HaKohen. He's not allowed to say that. Rather, yitkadshu, he should make himself holy. He should go into their mindset and their awareness of what he's going to do. They should be careful to realize where he is. Gam kan yesh geder niflash kedusha. Here we see another concept of what kedusha really is. Shi'amdu b'makom anikva lehem, v'lo yismachu al chashivotam litkarev yoter. You should be aware of the place which is your natural place, and don't use external things to push yourself beyond where you naturally are. So you have a person who wants to be even closer to Hashem than is his natural place where he is now. And for whatever reason he thinks that he has some maila, mutar v'afulai magia lo. He thinks, hey, you know who I am? You know what? I deserve it? He thinks I should go even closer. And Hashem says to them, no, that's not what kedusha is. Real kedusha is being exactly on your level. Exactly who you are. When I was in high school, I used to go to a shir, a Gemara shir by Rabbi Akiva Tatz. And he used to give five levels. Oh, no, he didn't used to give, but that in the base medrash where he taught, there were five levels of shirim. And he gave the basic one and the top one. Because, you know, you have to be really great to give the top one, and you also have to be very great to give the introduction. So he gave the top two. And there was other rabbanim who gave the middle ones. But he would sometimes sub for those. And there was one guy who used to come to all levels. Like he was so into learning, and he would come, he didn't care. Gemara Shir, I'm there. He would go to every single level. So Rav Tatz would say to him, when he would ask a question, which was a question above where they were, right? Or sorry, in this context, where he would ask a question which he'd heard the type of question being asked in a higher level Shir, but that wasn't like appropriate for him to ask. Like he would say, what's the nafkamina given in between? And they hadn't even understood like what the words were meant. They hadn't translated anything yet. And they just said words. And he's like, what's the nafkamina between this one and that one? And he didn't like even know what the perush was. Never mind the nafkamina. So they would say to him, Boris, ask on your level. Ask on your level. You know your level? You can go to all the shim if you want to. But ask on your level. You have to be on your level. Real kedusha is not when someone's being false. Real kedusha is not when someone's pretending he's higher than he really is. And he's taking on practices of something which is beyond where he is. Or he thinks that, magiali, I deserve something higher because of whatever. My father was there, or my brother was there, or my yichus was, whatever it is. All those things are, when a person is not acting on their level, they don't build anything authentic. And that's not going to be holy. Because real kedusha comes when you build yourself stage by stage. Like kiryat makomo. Veliot muchan la'amod b'makomo. You have to be willing to say, where am I now? And Rav Blachman spoke about this in a Motzei Shabbos once upon a time, down in the Bay Brinan, when we had a Merav Malka once. He said, you have to know your place. You have to know exactly where you are. And it's a tragedy when people come to yeshiva and they start taking on and pretending there's something they're not because they desire to be there. But they start pretending that they're there even though they're not there yet. And they start talking in like a lomdus way which they don't even understand what they're saying. Right? That drives Rav Blachman crazy when people do that. When they use terms. Right? You never ever use the word chalos din in Rav Blachman. What are you talking about? Shabbos? Lecha Mishnah? What are you talking about? Like he makes fun of like any phrase that a person will use, which is like a yeshivish phrase, which he's sure they don't even know exactly what that phrase means. They just heard like kind of that phrase being used in this general kind of a context, and therefore they use that phrase. It drives them crazy. He says, say it in English. Say what you want to say in English. Let's hear. Do you know what you're talking about? Because you don't even know. What are you talking about? You don't even know. Lakiret makomor. Know your place. You have to know exactly where you are to be able to grow from who you authentically are. Because if you're pretending you're something you're not, then you're not growing. Your imagination is growing. And you know what happens when your imagination grows? It hits you very, very hard when you think you're up here, and then suddenly you do something which is according to your real level, and you suddenly get this terrible shock of, how could that be? I'm this great level, and here I did this thing. And then you just drop everything. Okay, obviously all what I'm trying to work for is not true, and then a person goes even below their level at that point. Because they didn't work from an authentic place. Never desire to grow close to Hashem if it's not where your level is. Don't skip levels. Don't copy other people who are on levels which is not relevant to you. You'll only be able to grow if it's authentic for you. You won't be able to grow if you're pretending you're something you're not. Even if people who you respect are doing it. Don't ever make the case, but he's doing it and he's great. Okay, so he's great, so he's doing it. That's good for him. That doesn't mean it's good for you. You have to see where you are and work from your place upwards. How zev makomo mitrachek me'atzmo. Because if you try and pretend you're something you're not, then you're going away from yourself. And Kedusha can only be found when a person is in tune with himself. Kedusha cannot be found when a person is far away from himself. So these are all insights as to why it's crucial for a person to know who he is deeply, have insights to where he's holding, to be able to start building himself authentically so that he can be genuinely close to Hashem and not just have an image and an impression that he's close to Hashem, but really it's all false.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Have a good evening. I didn't mean to pick on you.
No, don't enjoy.